Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 14th day of March, Pi Day, Anno Domini 2026. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things that you use, not to let us kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. New U.S. laws designed to protect minors are pulling millions of adult Americans into mandatory age verification gates to access online content, leading to backlash from users and criticism from privacy advocates that a free and open internet is at stake. Roughly half of U.S. states have enacted or are advancing laws requiring platforms, not just adult content sites and online gambling services, but social media sites and apps and any site, app, or platform that users can access to block underage users, forcing companies to screen everyone who approaches these digital gates.
Everyone. Not
everyone.
Just, 'cause you have to prove you're an adult.
Right. This, by the way, includes your operating system. For a while now, websites are, yes, so if you log into your operating system, you have to verify you're old enough to log into your operating system. For a while now, websites offering adult content, gambling, or financial services have often relied on full identity verification that requires scanning a government ID and matching it to a live image. But most of the verification systems powering these checkpoints, often run by specialized identity verification vendors on behalf of websites, rely on artificial intelligence such as facial recognition and age estimation models that analyze selfies or video to determine in seconds whether someone is old enough to access content, and we know how reliable that is.
And then that data gets breached the next week, which
right.
has happened.
Social media company Discord announced plans in February to roll out mandatory age verification globally, while the company said, which the company said would rely on verification methods designed so facial analysis occurs on a user's device and submitted data would be deleted immediately. The proposal quickly drew backlash from users concerned about having to submit selfies or government IDs to access certain features, which led Discord to delay the launch until the second half of this year. One of the big problems tech is facing is that the patchwork of state laws vary in technical demands and compliance expectations. The regulations are moving in many different directions at once. The bigger problem is people, of course. Vendors say a challenge is balancing safety with how much friction users will tolerate. Excessive data collection creates friction that users resist. Many users perceive mandatory identity checks as invasive. Some users attempt workarounds, including prepaid cards or alternative credentials, or turning to unauthorized distribution channels. It's going to cause a privacy issue at the very least. In many implementations, verification vendors, not the websites themselves, process and retain the identity information, returning only a pass-fail signal to the platform. Most of these vendors say they're not selling the information on and, in fact, delete it, and I quote, immediately. But not a lot of people trust that. In addition, everybody knows what a huge target these companies will be for hackers. And while Mac and Microsoft people have been trained to give everyone who asks for their data, the Linux community has lost its collective mind. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis, would like us to remind you, is online age verification tools spread across the U.S. And the choices are, great idea. I'm cautiously optimistic. I don't like it, but I understand why. And over my cold, dead keyboard. So far, we've got 35 votes. 22 of you don't like it, but understand why. Followed by over my cold, dead keyboard. There you go. The iconoclasts among us. One person thinks it's a great idea. I'm assuming that was ironic or sarcastic.
Well, yeah.
But anyway, you can vote in the poll at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And, of course, when you're done with that, if you'd like to talk about this or dang near anything else under the sun, get what sun you can find in Rochester, give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
And we're all for protecting the children. Yes, we want to protect the children.
Absolutely.
But there's no privacy way to prove your age. You have to show an ID. Well, and then the other end has your ID. And then the other end loses your ID.
And how about fake IDs?
What a couple of people have done, Steve Gibson talked about it, when he had to get his extended validation certificate for his website.
Yeah.
They call the phone number that's already on record, and then he had to hold his driver's license up next to his face, move it around, move it past in front of his face to make sure the picture on the license matched the picture on his face, and it was a live video. It wasn't, you holding a picture of something up in front of you. So he had to jump through hoops for a website. Several of the states especially EU countries have started trying to push Apple and Google to do it at the App Store level. And when you set up your phone, you give it your age. Or your age. Apple doesn't age group, but probably Google does the same thing. That sets ratings on what kind of apps you can download.
Right.
Well, you can lie. See, that's the problem. You can lie. Or how about just using the web and not using an app? So now, when you log into the web, every website you go to has to do age verification, just in case you're a minor in your jurisdiction. Jurisdictions are different all over the world, too.
Right, right. That's part of it. The other part of it, of course, is this is not just on the web.
Mm-hmm.
This is on your computer.
Yep.
You will be forced to verify your age before you can log into your own computer.
We think that's why Microsoft has been pushing Microsoft accounts. It's very hard to do Windows 11 without a Microsoft account.
Right. And like I said in there, Microsoft people and Apple people are brainwashed into giving all their information to their various companies. That's fair. Linux people are angry.
Yeah. There have been men on the street. One of the late night talk show hosts will do street interviews with people. And I always wonder how many good answers do they get before they show the stupid one on TV.
Right.
But they ask people, what's your password? Here's a candy bar. Almost everyone will turn over their password for a candy bar.
Exactly right. Exactly right. It's I get that. But Linux people are going insane. Because, first, there's no mechanism in Linux.
Yeah. There is no one company they can force like Apple and Microsoft
and
Google.
Right, right. And so, how do you do that? And then in Windows and in the Mac, there is that whole identity package, right? You log in and it knows everything about you. So any program can query that and say, is this person old enough to download this program or view this content or whatever it is? That doesn't exist on Linux.
Right.
We don't take any of that information, so we don't have any of that information, so we can't give anybody any of that information.
And once you lie about, saying certain stuff and get it down on your machine, who the heck's going to come into your house and physically verify it?
Well, and on top of that, I'm a 13-year-old kid and I want to see porn. I go to my computer and my dad has already signed in.
Mm-hmm.
Bingo.
Yeah. And some internet companies, I think Blue Sky is one of the big ones, have just stopped operating in some states where these laws have passed.
Yep.
Mississippi's a big one. Texas is another one that's pending.
California's coming.
And they do that because most IP addresses are geolocated.
Right.
Because that's how it was set up in the very early days. But that's becoming muddied because IP addresses are now moving.
Well, not only that, but there is also one of the state legislatures, I forget which one, is floating a bill to ban VPNs.
Right. So the way to work around a blocked IP address is a VPN. Every business pretty much relies on VPNs for day-to-day usage. You cannot ban VPNs.
Any business that's interested in their own security does,
yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. So
sometimes I forget my VPN is turned on, and I.
Well, yes.
Yeah, because I always have it on when I'm out on remote accessing my server back at the office.
Of course, because that's what they're for.
Protection. Yeah.
This usage of them. What people say, oh, I have a VPN, so I'm private. No, you're not private with a VPN. You are not. That's not what they're for. They're to connect you to your home office.
Never mind what the TV commercials say.
Right, right. And they are private in the sense that between you and the VPN, traffic is encrypted. Well, guess what? Traffic is encrypted between me and every website I go to.
Mm-hmm.
Traffic is encrypted between me and Gmail. Traffic is encrypted everywhere on the internet these days.
The only thing it does is hide where you go from your ISP.
Right, and that's it.
But even then, it may not, because not all of them use encrypted DNS.
Right.
So they still know where you're going. And your ISPs are selling your data.
Right.
So that's the first. So some people want to run a VPN so the ISP can't sell their data. But then the VPN company, how's the VPN company, especially the free VPNs? They always...
Their whole idea is selling your right. data. They're Google.
If you're getting a free VPN, they're probably selling your data because they have to make money somehow.
I've toyed with the idea of running my own VPN on my web server.
Mm-hmm.
And then nobody gets my data but me.
Put an onion router on, too.
So
do a VPN into an onion router. But then, turns out, a lot of the exit nodes for onion routers are run by...
The FBI.
CIA. Yeah. Yeah. Or a government-funded university program.
Yep.
Where they get oversight.
Yep. Yeah, no, there is no privacy on the internet. You might as well just accept it. If you're going to use the internet, you must know that it's not private.
Yeah.
So to that end, this whole idea of age verification is fine. They already... Look, I will guarantee you that Google, Microsoft, Apple, and Facebook, Meta... already know everything about you, including your age, what that rash means, everything.
Yep.
So this age verification thing is not as big a deal as you think. Well, all they really have to do is ask Google.
Yeah.
Is Steve Ray old enough to view this? Yes. Done.
The bigger issue is the privacy implications that now somebody has your data, your identifying information that they can breach, which has happened, and use that to steal your identity, issue credit cards in your name.
Right.
There was a plan, one of the plans in England was kind of interesting. So we're used to going into a bar, showing our ID to get alcohol. But I read so many stories about people who are incensed they have to show their ID to buy alcohol. Don't you know that?
Yeah, right.
Well, I didn't bring my ID with me. So you're driving without a license?
Oh, hey.
Yeah.
I see that a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, when they come into our store and we need their driver's license to, you know, and they go, well, I don't have it. You drove here.
Yeah.
What happens if you get pulled over?
You're driving illegally. So you send a cop out. But, so in England there was a plan where... You would take you go to a bar, show the bartender your driver's license.
Right.
Then the bartender could log into some government database and say this person is of age without needing to submit your ID somewhere.
Right.
The ones that really get a kick out of are people that don't want to show their driver's license because they don't want the government to get their identity. You mean your government issued ID?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, another one that
people don't think.
Yeah. Another one that we have is like if you're going to rent one of the trucks,
mm-hmm.
they've got a whole new service right now. Whereas if you want to rent the vehicle, say, you know, for the time period that they allot, you now have to bring in your cell phone, your driver's license, and your insurance card.
Yep. Proof of insurance.
Because you've got to sign up and you've got to go into this. Take a picture of this QR code and go through the system and verify it and take picture front and back pictures of your license and that because of theft.
Yeah. Sure, of course.
I read a story about that where a lady was trying to rent a car, didn't have a driver's license, so they wouldn't rent it to her. So then she came back a few hours later with a driver's license for a 38-year-old white man, and she wasn't. And the clerk is saying, well, this isn't you. Yeah, I can't. You said I needed a license. Here's a license. Give me a car.
Yep.
You didn't say I needed my license.
Right.
I don't have a license. Well, then how do you plan to drive?
carefully.
You mean I have to know how to drive, too? Yes. Well, that's not any of the rental car signs.
You want to really see somebody get ticked off is I had this gentleman come in, get him through the whole contract and that, and I ask him for his license. I don't have it. I got to have it, you know? So he goes home, comes back. I go to do, and I get it on up, and I says, he says, so we're all set? I go, nope, can't have it. He goes, why? I says, your license ran out last week.
Or two years ago.
I meant to go get it renewed. Just go ahead. I'm going to get it renewed. Nope, can't do it.
I got like four emails before my registration expired.
Yeah, right.
My license, your driver's license usually lasts for 10 years, so...
Yep.
Yeah, I meant to. It's like your inspection sticker. Oh, yeah, it runs out at the end of the month. I'll get to it, and then suddenly it's the next month.
And my, one of my old cars, back when I was much younger, I had every year I got the next month sticker.
Oh, my driver's license does expire this year.
Well, there you go.
On my birthday, strangely enough.
I don't know when mine expires. Yeah. Or perhaps expired.
Yeah. Well, and there's stories about siblings that pass their expired license down to a younger sibling who isn't of age yet, and they look close enough.
Next year. I got till next year.
So now we're all looking.
Exactly.
Everyone, check your driver's license. Check your inspection sticker.
I just got my new inspection sticker, and I haven't put it in the car yet.
Yeah.
I'll wait till it warms up a little more.
Yeah.
Again.
I mean, the inspection place didn't do it?
Well, I just got a car.
Oh, brand new car. So they
they give you the temporary and mail you the regular one that you got to put on. And like you say, as long as you got it in the car, you can prove that you've got it.
Right, it is
too cold.
Well, put it in that front part of the dashboard.
Right.
So.
Well, I actually got, I was in a parking lot and a cop was looking at my car as I was coming out of the store. He said, is this yours? I said, yes, sir. He said, how long have you had it? I said, 3 weeks. He said, okay. Because it had the temporary sticker.
Yep.
And he said, okay, when you get the new, I said, look, I don't run the DMV.
Yeah.
It'll come when it comes.
Yep.
He said, yeah, I get that. He said, yeah, I get that.
Didn't get close enough to read the date on it.
Right. Well, like I said, it was in a parking lot and he was walking by and of course he looked.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a.
Every now and then I see there's like four or five cops sitting down at the Ridge Road to 390 entrance ramp.
Oh yeah, stopping everybody and
inspection stickers and registration. Yep.
What, the feed off the internet?
Yeah. So yeah, we give our information to all kinds of people, and every once in a while we balk for whatever reason. Like I said before, we hand our credit cards to the lowest paid employees in the world.
I mean, the station feed or the YouTube feed?
And so, I don't know, you know, we do that regularly every day, and we don't seem to care. We put our credit cards in gas station pumps that could easily have skimmers on them. We don't seem to care.
Yeah, you got to watch out for that.
You ought to turn your mic on.
Yeah. That's getting harder because they're with the new, 3D printers and everything else, they're making them so thin, paper thin, that they're literally just skins that they're putting on there. And the technology is so paper thin also.
I went to fill up my tank a couple weeks ago. And stopped at a place that did not have tap to pay. I left. I just can't trust it anymore. I don't care.
Yeah,
it was cheaper there than where I did stop, and I don't care.
Yeah, I only use tap to pay. It's just become second nature because it is so much more safer
right.
to use and not worrying about the card getting compromised or anything else because that's a bigger pain in the butt.
I've had my credit card stolen.
So have I. And, it's a pain in the butt. If you folks, don't want to take the time to pain in the butt set up. All right. Then don't complain when your card gets hacked because, you know, you wound up giving it to this person or that person, and all of a sudden now, matter of fact, when was it? Last year, last Memorial weekend, my wife's card got hacked, and they had the holiday weekend use it.
And that's the best time to get it.
Yeah. Oh, they were going out, and they wound up getting their nails done, and they were going to this place to eat and everything else. And of course, you know, it took a while to, you know, get it settled, but, you know.
I was very lucky. I told you what happened. I got a call that said, did you just buy 7 fur coats in Florida?
Oh, yeah.
No. Well, then we're going to cancel your credit card. And they sent me a new one. Just so it's I use tap to pay
everywhere.
Particularly at a gas station. I'd rather pay a few cents extra. It's a whole lot cheaper to pay more for gas than it is to go through the hassle of losing your credit card and having all the things and get a new one.
I go to BJ's for my gas.
Their tap to pay finally works. It said coming soon for like 3 years.
Yeah, and now, you know, plus I have their card. So I wind up getting 10 cents off a gallon. And, yeah, you can just, you first flash, you know, have them scan the card, and then you tap. I now tap my credit card, so that way, nope.
I tried using a picture of the BJ's card on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't accept that because of the reflection of the screen. It's the wrong barcode scanner for that. So I have to get the physical card out of my wallet. Then I can use my phone for tap to pay.
Sounds like
annoying.
Annoying.
Boy, annoying. And yeah, to a previous caller, we checked the station feed and the YouTube feed, and they both seemed to be working fine. Maybe it's your end and not our end?
No, it has to be if it's all working, I guess.
There's 100 people listening online. To YouTube, or to the station, and where's my YouTube counter? YouTube settings, 26 people watching on YouTube.
All right, well, we do all of that, let's head out to the phones. Our first caller is Larry from Fairport, New York. What's up, Larry?
Hey, I just wanted to add to this conversation about identity. And credit cards. I'm set up with my bank that every time my credit card gets used, I get a text message and I get an email.
Nice.
And
I
got that set up when I left my card at a restaurant one night. And I said, oh, my God, what are we going to do? But having that show up is really, you know, it's actually kind of gratifying. I was on a trip and I'm down in Virginia visiting family, and we bought some gas, and as I'm paying for it, the phone buzzes in my pocket that is registered that I'm buying the gas, which is really, I really like that.
Yeah.
I just paid a relatively large medical bill, and it got declined, and I had to call the fraud department and say, you know, this is really me.
A lot of times you can use the app on your phone.
I did. Well, I got too, the app on the phone. What I didn't realize is it came and said, this charge for X is this you? And I said, yes. What I didn't realize is all that does is mean I could go back in and resubmit.
Do it again, yeah.
I thought that was enough.
Sometimes. It used to be.
Now it isn't. Yeah. And so I had to...
Long gone are the days of checking your credit card statement when the bill comes in the mail once a month.
Yeah, right.
Well, one, the bill doesn't come in the mail anymore.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, that makes... Thanks, Larry. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right, thanks. Are we done? Was that it? I guess that was it. Okay, thanks, Larry. We tend to get a little cavalier with our credit cards these days, because we've had them for so long, and we use them for so much, they become just another thing we do. But we need to be really careful.
And it's especially more hazardous with debit cards. Almost everyone uses debit cards.
Though. Right.
Debit cards, the money's taken out of your account directly, virtually immediately.
Right.
And there are no protections like there are in a credit card, which has a $50 max liability.
Right.
But most credit card companies waive that anyway.
Right.
But if the money is taken out of your credit card or your checking account from your debit card, it's very tough to get that back.
Yeah, it's gone. It's definitely gone.
But I had a couple of scary things the other day. Pending charge for 0 cents went through in Missouri. And then a bill I actually paid shows up. So apparently their billing office is in Missouri.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour on Pi Day. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in a few.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Mike from Gates, New York, on the line. What's up, Mike?
Hi, I've got some questions having to do with backups.
Yeah.
You guys are kind of the local experts.
Well, you need to get out more, clearly.
I'm down to about 43 gigabytes free on my hard drive. Is that enough to be concerned about?
Well, it depends. What do you do? And how big was your hard drive to begin with?
It's a 1 terabyte drive.
Okay.
And I've got 40 gig left.
Okay, so you've got a lot of stuff on it.
Yeah, mostly pictures.
You better have backups.
Yes, I'm working on that. Have you guys ever heard of SyncBack?
SyncBack?
SyncBack.
I have not. That's not one I'm familiar with.
Oh, okay. That one was given to me by a member of a photography group, and that works well. I was trying to back up to OneDrive. I also have another online service that I use. That one's much faster, and I'm trying to keep two online, and then for my third one, and I have a backpack USB drive.
Good.
So that would
good.
Give me three of them. That's good. And I'm just curious about the amount of space left, if that's enough to be worried about.
Generally speaking, you want about 10% free disk space.
Mm-hmm.
Although now that we're into the terabyte, 2 terabyte, 100 gigs free.
Right, I have a 4 terabyte drive on my machine.
10% is an awful lot anymore.
Yeah.
The big issue with free disk space is when your system runs out of memory. So if you have a lot of programs open, when it runs out of memory, it swaps to disk. And if you don't have enough disk space left to swap to, things can get really slow. I know on the Mac I have a memory pressure meter. I think Windows Task Manager does too. That will tell you how much memory you're using and how much swap you might need. Generally speaking, 10% is good. When you get down to that 1%, so I wouldn't let it go below what your actual RAM is. So if you have 16 RAM, don't let it get below 16 or double the RAM.
Double
you
the
need
RAM.
Swap space. Yeah, don't let it get below 32.
Right, but in general, having 40. What'd you say? 43 gig.
Yeah,
that's not terrible. Again, it depends on what you do. For the average user who doesn't run a lot of different programs simultaneously, 43 gig is okay. For someone who does a lot of photo editing, 43 gig may not be enough.
Okay.
Right? So I would say 100 gig is where you want to be. That's more of a sweet spot for high-end photo editing.
Yeah. And it may be time to start thinking about a second drive for more storage. Or replacing the internal drive with a bigger internal drive, which generally costs more. But it's more convenient to deal with one drive letter than two.
And then,
but if you do get an external drive for storage, make sure you include that in your backup drive.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Do Do you have a Google account?
Yes, I do.
There's 15 gig free storage right there.
Right. And do you buy... Sorry, what?
I said I make use of that for some stuff.
Good.
Yeah.
I have a couple of Google Drive accounts.
Yeah, good. And each one you can... I've got four different ones set up. Because on, mm-hmm. on each machine you can have three separate drives, you know, assigned letters. And each one of them, that's 45 gig of free storage space, you right. know, that you can do multiple backups.
Are you an Amazon Prime customer?
No, I am not.
Okay. Never mind.
Yeah, that would have been a good one, too.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Because OneDrive, you know, it seems
well, you can buy more storage. So if you're paying for the extra storage.
No, that's where they get you, though, because they back up everything.
Right.
You know, they want to do the whole system and everything else, and there's no need to. Because if your system goes sour, there's no way I want to do a restore of a corrupt system.
Right.
I want to do, I'll reinstall the programs, but not that operating system because I don't know where the heck that thing that messed it up is hiding. Yeah,
so, anyway, Mike, what I would suggest is start by doing a disk cleaning, right? So, get rid of your temp files and that stuff and see if that gives you some additional space.
Okay. I had a customer the other day, half their hard drive, it was only 500 gigs to begin with.
Right.
But half of it was a mail log. They had turned on mail logging. So every time it checked for mail, it saved a log of every single transaction.
Right.
200 gigabytes of mail logs.
Yep.
Now they don't need to buy a new drive.
The issue that I have with OneDrive is that it made a copy of like the documents folders and some of the pics.
That's what it's designed to do. OneDrive is designed to synchronize your home folder, your documents and your photos, between you and Microsoft. You have to be wary about the difference between synchronizing and backup. That if you make a change, that change is synced to the other side, and now you've lost the previous version of that file. A backup program keeps all those old versions, so you can go back in time and find the file that you did yesterday, when you realize you screwed up what you were writing today.
Some sync programs, like pCloud, has versioning.
Versioning is
so
the other thing,
so you can go
yeah.
back like three versions of a file. But be aware of... Sorry, go ahead.
Is versioning in pCloud something you have to turn on? Because I have pCloud.
I don't honestly remember. I use pCloud. I've been using it for a while. I don't remember if that... is pCloud versioning automatic? I don't know.
Looks like your SyncBack has the option for versioning in the higher levels, the Pro and the SE level. Yeah.
pCloud versioning is automatic. They call it revisioning. They're revisions. So revisions are kept for 15 days on the free plans, 30 days on the paid plans.
Yep. Okay. Do you have a tool, well, with Windows 11, do you have to be concerned about cleaning out the registry if you install and then uninstall programs?
In general, the registry is a nightmare.
So stay away from it.
Yeah, using some sort of registry cleaner. It depends on how, obviously, if you only install programs, not a problem. If you do a little bit of installing and uninstalling, not really a problem. But if you do a lot of installing and uninstalling and trying a program and getting rid of it and changing your mind and doing something else, then your registry starts to grow quite uncontrollably and it becomes huge and unwieldy, takes forever to load, takes forever to search, and really can slow your machine down. So using
Revo
uninstaller or CCleaner or something along those lines to keep your registry lean and mean is probably not a bad idea.
Yeah. I don't have problems with speed, at least not yet. So I believe you guys have answered all my questions.
Good.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So he sounds like he's pretty well set with three backups. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of two reasons to have a backup. One is if you delete a file and realize you need it back. That's not maybe not be as a critical need.
Right.
The other is your computer dies and you lose everything. That's a critical need.
That's a critical need.
And so the odds of your computer dying are low, but not zero.
Never zero.
So you get a backup drive. The odds of them both dying are lower, but not zero.
So you get three.
And it's lower, but not zero.
Right. Well, and that's why if you go and take a look at our backup plan, if you go to Soundbites, under some important links, the second link down is backup, backup, backup. And you don't have enough backups. That's simple enough. And we advocate the 3-2-1 backup plan. Three separate backups in two separate places, at least one of which is off-site.
So it can be a hard drive you take to a safe deposit box.
Right.
Just
but
out
most
of your house.
Most people buy online storage.
Cloud storage is easier, yeah.
Cloud storage is easier, yep. Faster. And it can be, here's the big thing. Automated. Cloud backups, yep, are automated, which means you don't have to remember to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you. Steve can tell you more than I can. How many people, yep, say, oh, I meant to back up. Well, mm-hmm,
shoulda,
you know,
coulda, woulda.
You know what the road to hell is paved with.
One month we had three customers come in after a house fire, and their computer and their backup drive sitting right next to each other were either crushed by the collapsing floor,
right,
melted by the fire, or drowned by the water putting out the fire.
Right.
Yeah.
So having one that's off-site,
yep,
meant they would have been okay.
Or get a fireproof backup for inside.
Right, right.
Which are available.
Which are available. But now again, most of those are safes. And so you then have to remember to update what's, yep, in the safe.
There's a couple of them where the hard drive is in a fireproof box.
Right. Those are very expensive.
With a port on,
yeah,
it.
It's a whole lot cheaper to get online storage.
The Solo G3 isn't too bad.
Yeah, okay. But at any rate, the idea here is that it breaks our heart when, yep, somebody says, I've lost all my data. Or more importantly, I've lost all my grandmother's pictures.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, though you can recreate a lot of data.
Yeah, documents and every spreadsheets and all that, they can.
You can recreate many of those, but you cannot recreate the photo of your grandparents holding your child for the first time.
Yeah.
That's a one-off, and you need to back that up somewhere. And, you know, we've said before, one of the perks, at least currently, of Amazon Prime is unlimited photo storage. You should be using it. If you're an Amazon Prime customer, whether it's because you want the music or the streaming service or the free shipping, in addition, you get unlimited photo storage. I found that out, I uploaded some.
Mm-hmm.
They have like half a terabyte of music.
Just photos, not video.
Photos, rather.
But photos is great.
Photos is important. All of them limit videos, and I understand why. I don't like it, but I understand it. But the photos are really the huge thing, you know. So if you've got photos on your computer and they are not backed up, they will be gone at some, mm-hmm, point.
Yep.
You know, the other thing is people say, oh, my hard drive started making a funny noise.
About 6 months
yeah, ago. Yeah, you need to have backed it up 5.5 months ago.
The other one that's annoying is, it worked fine yesterday.
Hmm?
Yeah.
That's how it happens. Everything, yeah, worked fine until it doesn't.
So, yeah. Again, I know we harp on this, and I know a lot of you are doing backups, but take a moment and think about it.
When was
the last time you backed up? How certain are you that everything is backing up? When was the last time you checked? And as Steve was about to say,
yep,
what would you cry if you lost?
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that's backed up. And again, 3-2-1. Three separate backups in two separate places, at least one of which is off-site. So do that, you know, start your plan today. A lot of them cost a little bit of money. I get that.
It's how important your data, your photos, are to you.
Right.
That's the bottom line. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the pleading and everything else, and, you know, I woulda, shoulda, coulda, woulda, isn't going to get them back once that hard drive crashes beyond recovery.
Then you go to Drive Savers and pay a couple $1,000s to maybe get your data back.
Yeah, maybe. Right. That's a big maybe. Yep.
I had a friend of mine had asked me years ago, would you back up my website? So because I'm me, I wrote some code that backs it up every day at 2 a.m. He called me a month ago and said, my website went down. What do I do? You had a backup once, but that's like 3 years old. I said, no, my backup is last night.
Yeah.
So here you go. You know?
Backup complete. No files copied.
In my case, all files copied because I check. So, you know, I back up all my stuff every night. I back up my backups. I back up the backups of my backups. I got paranoid the other day and thought, you know, I've got my Pi 400, the half a gig of half a terabyte of storage space on it. I should be backing up to that. So I went to do it and I thought, wait. So I went and looked at my CronTab, which is the nightly backup, the program that runs and does whatever I tell it to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm already doing that. I've been doing that for 2 years. I'd forgotten about it. It was so common to me to make sure everything always backs up everywhere all the time.
Well, that's like with me, with the banking. That's the one thing that I, you know, my banking program, and I've got it set. I'm so paranoid that every time I open or close it, it does a backup to my three different places. Just because, to me, that is the critical thing I don't want to have to reset up and redo. Documents and anything else, yeah, I've got those backed up, but it's not as critical as the banking.
Right.
Because that would be a pain in the butt to set up and redo and, you know, just too much time into it now since I made the conversion from Quicken over to Money Dance.
Just the other day, I was talking to a friend of mine, and she said, I just finished my master's thesis. I said, you should back it up. And we were talking about that and how to do it and blah, blah, blah. And then when I got off the phone with her, I thought to myself, how many copies of my master's thesis do I have? Seven. I have seven copies of my master's thesis.
Nothing wrong with that.
Well, exactly. And I thought, that's not a lot.
Did you get it printed in a big bound book?
That's not, no. Yeah. That I didn't do.
No, you had to buy a fire safe for that.
Right.
Yeah.
What I do have are, there used to be a program, a magazine called Fourth Dimensions, and I've got all the bound issues of that, and I'm in that. But I don't have any backups of that. I just realized that I don't have backups of that.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, I just got the magazine, right, mm-hmm. I wrote some programs and had them published. But, yeah. Anyway, the idea is, you know, we harp on backup all the time, but I'd rather harp on it than get that phone call that says, I just lost everything, what do I do?
Yep.
Until somebody loses something that's critical to them, they don't think about it.
Yep.
The minute something important happens that, you know, you go to turn on that computer and it doesn't turn on, or you go to open this particular program and it doesn't work anymore, then you go into panic mode.
Yep.
Then you realize maybe I should have backed it up a while back.
Right. And what you just said is very smart. We tend to think in terms of catastrophe. If there's an earthquake or a fire or whatever, whatever. But what Dave said is true. You go to turn on your machine one morning and it doesn't. Now what?
Especially with Windows doing its updates overnight when you're sleeping.
Exactly right. And how many times have we seen people say, oh, it borked my system. It's now a brick.
Yep.
And it wiped out all my data. Or all my data are in BitLocker, and now I can't get it out anymore.
And see how much Microsoft cares if your machine is bricked.
So if you see something, you know, BitLocker on Windows or File Vault on Mac, almost no one needs that. Turn that off.
Turn that off.
It makes your computer fragile and easy to lose data. And if you want to encrypt your main drive, please don't encrypt your backup drive too.
Well, exactly.
Because the Mac will warn you, your backup drive's not encrypted.
Okay, good.
Good.
Yeah.
So when the encryption the encryption doesn't fail, but if you know a bit
it
dies,
it might.
Right.
Yeah. The no one can get the data without the password, not even you.
Or if you forget your password, how many times do we hear? I don't have a password on that. Yeah, you do.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot set this up without a password.
Every time somebody gets a new computer, what's your email password? I don't have one.
I don't have a new password for my email. Yes, you do.
The computer remembered it for you. I'm almost to the point where I don't want the computer to remember it for them.
Right.
So they'll have to type it in every time, but then they'll go back to using something simple.
Well, but that's NPass is simple.
Yeah.
And it remembers everything.
I used to, for a while, Apple's password manager, Keychain, stopped counting your passwords. And Keychain was kind of hidden in the system. It was always there. People were using it, but didn't know they were using it. That's
right,
where
right,
your mail
right.
password save, your website password. So then in the later OS, they brought it out and call it passwords. And it counts your passwords again, and I have over 1,000 saved passwords.
Nice.
Yeah. It's a good start.
Yeah.
I don't think I have that many.
But that's the thing. With NPass, I don't worry about that. I only got to worry about one password. Otherwise, mm-hmm. NPass handles everything. And, you know, I must have at least a couple hundred different passwords. Because anything and everything that I go into or sign into, I first, as I'm setting it up, I on the other screen open up NPass and create the new one because I have NPass create the password.
Yep.
And then just say copy and go back to the website, paste it in there. I'm done. And it's complicated. You know, I make some pretty complex passwords that I guarantee. And I had it happen once. My Facebook got hacked. And I guarantee you, nobody is going to hack that account again.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Unless they got a hell of a lot of free time to figure out 64 characters.
Yeah, and that's what I do for mine as well, 64 characters.
And most, if not all, the password managers will warn you if your email address is seen in a breach. And the Have It Been Pwned website will actually let you check for passwords.
Right.
Which is all done local on your computer. It doesn't go back to them. To see if your password hasn't been breached, it will tell you if it's good or not.
Right.
Yep.
And people almost always your password isn't good.
Yeah.
Maybe good, but it's not excellent.
Good enough.
Yeah. So, we talk about, I know, we harp about this, I know, but we're going to get those calls. What do I do? I don't want to get those calls. I don't want to answer those calls. So we'll keep harping on it. We'll keep reminding you to do it. And there are a bunch of you out there who back up regularly, religiously, multiple places, et cetera, et cetera. And you're sitting there smug and smiling and going, yeah, move on. Good for you.
Mm-hmm.
We're happy for you.
They're the minority, though.
But I'm hoping that the others of you are sitting and thinking, you know, I really should be doing some form of backup. And again, if you have any sort of online storage, Gmail, for example, or Amazon Prime, back up some photos. Grab your most important photos, all those pictures of your babies, all those pictures of your grandparents, or for some of you, the picture of your car, and back them up to something that isn't in your house. And again, you know, even if you're as cheap as I am, and you don't want to spend a lot of money doing that. There are lots and lots of free services. As Dave said, he's got 4 different Gmail accounts, 3 different Gmail accounts. It's 45 gig of storage. And Gmail accounts are free. Take out some nonsense name, and you can then store 15 gig worth of data on. 15 gig is a lot of stuff, not a lot of pictures.
I just learned this week that Google limits you to 30 characters for your address.
For your name.
For your name.
Yeah.
I hadn't realized anyone tried anyone. Like I read a story. Someone was trying to use a 100-character username Google won't allow it. We'll make them.
Right. Well, no. Some people's names are longer than 30 characters, and that's the problem. Get yourself some additional storage. Apple gives you 5 gig. Microsoft gives you 5 gig. Google gives you 15. Use it. Why not? All right. That music tells us we are done with the first hour of this show. But don't go anywhere and do not despair. There's a whole nother hour coming of the longest running computer show in the known universe. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright. A whole nother hour of Steve Ray. A whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco. And a whole nother hour of you. We have somebody who called in. And we'll be getting to them after the break. But you can join them by calling us at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. We're going to take a slightly longer break. And you should, too. Take a little bio break. Grab yourself a snack and a beverage. But don't go too far and come right back, because we got a whole lot more sound bites coming your way right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We have Larry from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Larry?
Good afternoon, guys. I am sitting here right now I just plugged in another Seagate 2-terabyte spinning drive. And I was surprised I was able to get it for less than a 1-terabyte SSD.
Prices are skyrocketing.
I'm actually going to probably buy another one today before everything spirals out of control.
Good thinking.
The problem I'm having is I plugged in the expansion, the new SSD drive. It's a Seagate. And got a couple of things here. And one of them says... where does it say at? Oh, it says this product is formatted XFAT for use with both PC and Mac. For Time Machine, it must be reformatted for Mac. Reformatting will delete all blah, blah, blah. The SSD right now that's plugged in is on Time Machine. I thought this thing would just see Time Machine and go for it.
No, Time Machine has requirements as to what file system is on the drive. For older operating systems, it can use HFS Plus. For newer systems, it needs APFS.
I have the latest OS on my machine.
Yeah, so that's why it's telling you.
The one I got
you.
From your shop.
Yeah, so it can't run Time Machine onto a Windows compatible disk, basically. So XFAT or FAT, any of the FATs or NTFS. It has to be a Mac-only format.
Okay, so let's see here. If I open then Time Machine, open Time Machine settings.
Get info on the disk as it shows on the desktop, and that will show you what the file system of it is.
He said it was XFIT. What he wants to know is how does he reformat it?
Let Time Machine do it. When you pick it in Time Machine, it asks if you want to reformat it and say yes.
Oh, just say yes.
Or you go into the disk utility and you can format it yourself.
Oh,
but I
okay.
think it formats it APFS case sensitive, which is weird because the OS itself never uses case sensitive. But I guess
oh,
if you want it.
Dave, I just clicked into Time Machine, clicked on add, and then it said options. It sees the new drive, and it says set up disk.
Yep.
If I just click that, then it probably should reformat and go from there.
Well, then you'll get the prompt that it wants to reformat it. You may get a prompt about encrypting.
Yeah, I see encrypt, and it says encrypt is on.
Yeah, click that and turn it off.
Okay, it's off.
You know, unless you're the CIA, you don't.
No. Disk usage limit, I'm just going to say none and done, and
yeah.
I guess.
Yes, you can set a disk usage limit if you want to share a drive between people. Drives are cheap enough. You get to each one, each computer its own drive.
So now in the background, it'll format it and move data over to it.
Yep.
So and just leave your machine on for a day, and you're good to go.
Yep.
Okay. So it says erasing expand will destroy all information, and then it says in red, erase expansion.
Yep. So it's warning you that it's going to erase. And you want to make sure it says the name of the backup drive, not the name of your main system drive, which it shouldn't.
Oh.
But
now,
so that's the danger if you go into disk utility is picking the wrong drive.
Okay. It just warned me. It says couldn't unmount disk.
It's being read by something. Try again. The unmount might have finished.
Okay. New password. I don't need a new password.
So turn off encryption.
Encryption, once again, is turned off. Disk usage limit, none. And then I'll just go again, erase expansion. And it came back again. Couldn't unmount disk.
Yeah, something else is using the disk. So there's something trying to read the disk.
Okay.
You can try unmounting it in the Finder itself. Just the eject command.
Okay. And I'll look at it that way.
Yeah.
And if I can't, I got another whole hour.
That's exactly right.
To show
yep.
the whole universe.
We always we wish someone would write a program to tell you what's using, or the Finder should tell you. I can't unmount it.
Because
right. this program is trying to access the disk.
Right.
So I can quit that program.
Okay,
so may if you have other
now.
Programs open. Do you have any other
Finder
programs open?
Tell me anything.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll pick at it a while, and if I can't, I got 50 minutes left.
Yeah.
Exactly right. Give it a shot.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Larry.
Bye-bye. Yep.
See, with Windows, you could do a Control-Alt-Delete, bring up the task manager.
Yeah, there's a force eject, but if something is trying to use the disk, you really don't want to force eject it.
Right. Well, I had that.
Well, it may not matter because he's erasing it anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I had that issue the other day, as a matter of fact. I couldn't eject a drive, a thumb drive.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that it's because I had opened up a terminal program and was in that directory.
Yep.
And it was saying, no, you really don't want to do this.
Something is using it, yeah.
Yeah.
So if you quit all other programs, that may help as well.
Right. In my case, I just CD'd out of that directory and I was able to eject just fine.
Sometimes it's the Spotlight index. It's trying to index the drive.
Right.
So you may have to put the drive into the Spotlight's privacy tab so it doesn't index it. So Spotlight is the searching program, and the index is used to make it faster to search. And sometimes the index gets messed up, and you have to rebuild it.
Yeah, there are programs for Windows and for Linux that work like Searchlight. They they index your entire hard drive.
Yeah.
Now, good side of that is it makes it easy to find stuff. Bad side of that index is huge.
Yeah.
So, you know, our first caller, Larry, who was it was talking about?
Mike with 43 gigs.
Mike with 43 gigs free. If he's got, you know, he may have a giant, with a terabyte drive, you've probably got a pretty big index file.
Yeah.
And that's going to contribute to it. So, anyway, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Hi, James. What's up?
How you doing, Nick and Dave and Steve? All of a sudden on Monday, a red check mark showed up in my Chrome, the bar on the top, and it seems like my computer slowed down. What is that red check mark, and how do I get rid of it?
Is it everywhere, or is it just in one certain website?
In the center of the bar on the top, the Google search bar, I guess. Have you ever heard of the red check mark?
I have not seen the red check
mark. There can be a red bar at the left edge if you're on an unsecure website.
No, it's in the center. It's a red check mark. Like if you were in school and the teacher was grading your paper and they had a red pencil and they put a check there.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
What it sounds like is a program that's doing it.
You installed anything recently?
Nope.
Okay, it could be a have you clicked on it?
There's nothing to click on. It's just there.
But click directly on that check mark.
You can't click on it. No, it's there. Matter of fact, when I, shut down everything and it goes to, your home screen with the picture, it's still there. It's a red check mark.
Did somebody use a Sharpie on your monitor?
No.
But you said if you close the browser, it's still sitting there?
Still there. It's a red. I started to look it up last week.
So that's something in Windows itself, then.
Check mark.
So it's actually on the Windows desktop, not in Chrome.
Correct. It's all, on the desktop. And I'm looking, red check mark.
Okay, so that's in that upper bar at the very top. All right, that may mean that the OneDrive sync is failing, and that's usually because it's full.
What's full?
The OneDrive.
The drive. They want you to buy more space.
So how do I do that?
Well, you can buy one, if you want more, if you want to buy more space in OneDrive,
mm-hmm.
you can do that.
Go to the OneDrive icon in the taskbar or in the start menu.
Right, go to OneDrive in the start menu, and it will lead you to paying them.
But
trust me,
whether you want to put all your stuff on OneDrive is the other question, because that actually turns itself on by automatically, and then you run out of space and they make you pay more.
Right.
What do you recommend?
Not using them.
Well,
I'd get another service.
We recommend that you definitely back up everything. That is something we always recommend. The question is where and how. OneDrive isn't bad, but it's very limited unless you're paying.
What's the alternative to that?
A second drive that you attach, say, USB, or you can store stuff in your Google Drive, all the things we talked about earlier in the show. But if you want to, you can open up OneDrive and through them buy more storage. It's not terribly expensive, so, it's not a bad solution.
Okay, I think I'll do that because right now that's the easiest for me, and I don't know how to do all the other stuff.
It's $2 a month for 100 gig. $10 a month for a terabyte, which, again, is not a terribly large sum of money for some people. That's your choice how you do that. But if you've got the funds, it's not a bad or difficult way to go.
So $2 a month, should that be enough?
It depends on how much stuff you've got on your machine. But if you've been running OneDrive, fine.
Up until day one when I bought it. I didn't even know about it.
If you've been running OneDrive fine until now, and it's just now showing you that red check mark.
Yeah, that's 4 years I've had it.
Yeah, so it's probable that 100 gig is going to be enough for you for a while.
So the $2 a month or the $10 a month is better?
The $2 a month should be fine for you.
Start with that and see how it goes, because you can always up it.
You're right. You can always get more. Start with the $2 a month, and if the check mark comes back, move it up.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, good luck. Have fun.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that was my mistake. I thought it was in Chrome, but it was apparently at the top.
Yeah.
In the top bar, and I get that.
We have some customers that are just vehemently opposed to paying Apple or Microsoft anything for storage.
I understand that.
Yeah, me too.
Yep. Even no, so Apple has a 99 cent a month tier for 50 gigs.
Right.
And you think about how many...
And for most people, that's more than enough.
Yeah.
And how many millions of dollars of that is that to Apple?
Oh, clearly.
Out of a billion customers?
But for the individual,
yeah.
A buck a month against the pain of losing very important pictures and documents,
yep.
It's not a lot of money.
Yeah.
Assuming you can fit your data in that space. Now, I know people who are running businesses who don't buy any offline storage, and that's just short-sighted.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. This is your business. You should be backing up everything.
And we hear
18
that
18 times.
Hear that all the time. Customer comes in with a broken computer. How long is it going to be? I do my home business on that one computer. Are you sure it's going to need a part? Yeah, your screen is broken.
Yeah,
it's going to be 3 days to get the part in.
No, I'm sorry. Larry just called back what you said to do.
Yeah.
Worked. He unplugged it, plugged it back in, got it up. He's going. Thank you very much.
Good. Yep.
Larry, that's the other Larry.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. All right,
so when your computer's broken, it's going to be broken until it's fixed.
Yeah.
So if you're running your whole business on one computer, you might need a backup computer.
You think?
Yeah.
Not just a backup drive, a backup computer.
Right.
So if your data's gone, you can restore from your backup drive. If your computer dies, you need another computer.
And that's why a lot of people use online services like Google Drive or you know, Microsoft's 365, because it doesn't matter what computer you're on. You still have access to all of those data through any computer. All you have to do is log into the network. And I get that. I use Google Drive constantly, but I back everything up. There's a Google Takeout, which used to be called the Data Liberation Front, which I loved that name. But now it's just called Google Takeout, which is boring. And you can go there and take out that Google.com and download all of your stuff, which I then throw on thumb drives. Now I've got, and you can back up everything. You can back up just your documents or just your pictures or just your contacts. You know, that I back up my contacts regularly, because I've got some people
in
there.
Your user folder. If you, if you're going to save anything, if you grab your user folder, which is going to have your photos, your documents, your contact list, and all that stuff, you're going to be pretty good shape. That if you just select that and say, yeah, just do that and grab that and shove it off to a cloud storage, perfect.
Yeah.
That way you've got yourself covered.
So there is a running joke about OneDrive. You know, I saved a file. OneDrive says, hey, thanks. And all right, let me open it again. What file?
Yeah, right.
where did you save? Yeah. When you save a file, look at the folder you're saving it in, please.
Yeah, do that. But yes, and when you're saving some of that stuff, 15 gig is more than enough. So if you've got a Google Drive, store that stuff there. Why not?
That's what I say. I've got, four different Google accounts. That's four different store. That's 60 gig of stuff. And like I say, my banking stuff, that goes to three of them.
Sure.
And then I've got a fourth one that I use for garbage.
And you can automate all of that. So you push one button and everything is done.
It just does it. The program automatically I've got it set up that it allows me to just go ahead and back it up. Yeah, so I'm good there, and don't have to worry about it, because to me, like I say, that and my photos. Of course, my photos, I've got Amazon Prime, so everything just automatically goes up there.
Yeah.
And I've got, decades.
I also pay for unlimited data storage on Bluehost. I should be using it more. I'm already using what? There's 1,100 plus sound bites shows up there.
You can give some to me. That 100 terabytes of storage I have, I'm using it.
I'm up,
I'm up to 6 terabytes now uploading videos.
Yeah. So they keep every once in a while I get this thing said, we've increased your storage, and you can hear in the background somebody going, how the heck is he using all that storage? Well, take a look at what I'm saving.
Yeah.
I'm paying for it. I'm going to use it.
Yep.
That's one thing I reflect back on that I regret so much is back when I was growing up, my dad worked at Key Drugs. It was an old drugstore. And he used to get photo, you know, all the photo work done for free.
Sure, of course.
Because he worked there. And, I mean, I'm one of six, and we used to have literally shoe boxes full of photos. And the one sad thing is I was, you know, away in service when my mom moved from our house, and all those photos and everything else were just thrown out the attic window down to a dumpster, and every one of them gone.
Yeah.
When we moved into our house, in our living room, there are built-in bookcases. Yes, I live in Downton Abbey. And in the base of one of them is, there are drawers in the base. In the base of one, in one of those drawers were pictures from the previous tenants. Just left there.
Missed that drawer. Missed that drawer when they were moving out, maybe.
And unfortunately, they had passed. So, the son had passed. That's how I knew the family. I was friends with the son, and then the mother was gone, and I didn't, there's nobody, I knew nobody else in that family to give those pictures to. I still have them in a box, but
we go to a family reunion, we bring all the photos and say, does anyone remember who these people are, so we can write them on the back.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the one picture that I recovered and I have up storage is, it's a very rare picture. My dad was one of 19, and we one Thanksgiving, they took a picture, and one of my uncles was missing, because he was still down in Kentucky. But there was, in the center, my grandmother and grandfather and all the kids around them, literally stacked up in tears. Because that was always the big thing. At Thanksgiving, we got together at the Polish Falcon Club and spent the whole day there eating and catching up and having fun with, you know, cousins and everything else. And all those pictures, again, other than that one, are gone.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, now we're running into generations now where nobody has physical pictures anymore. It's all digital.
Yeah. Right. But people aren't saving them either, and that's the point of this.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, we have a picture of my daughter, my wife, her mother, and her mother.
Yep.
Four generations of the Weinsler family, or Weinsler women, in one picture. That is a rare and beautiful thing.
Yeah.
We've got one in my family, five generations of boys and five generations of girls.
Yep. So, and my wife's family used to live in Leroy, and they found a picture of some family from the 1800s standing in front of the house. Somebody took a picture. We recreated it.
Oh, cool.
So now we have both of those.
Nice.
Pictures. And we, you know, it was all the same. A father, a mother, two daughters, their husbands.
Yep.
It was a complete family. It was very cool.
My wife has lots of printed photo albums, and I've bought her several printers over the years so she can keep going with her digital cameras. We know our kids are just going to throw them away. They don't care.
They don't care. I know. Yeah, I know. My cousins, my wife's cousins, one year for Christmas, gave everybody a thumb drive with all of the grandparents' movies and still photos on it.
No.
Now, at the time, they owned a television station, so they just told one of their people,
record everything.
Go do this. Well, okay. But the point is they did it.
Yeah.
And we have those. And I've got that backed up in 15 different places.
We had a customer who, an old uncle had passed, and so they took all the old 8mm film rolls to have them digitized. Apparently, there was a stag film in the middle of it.
And nice!
Either they didn't notice or they didn't care.
Right.
And put it on the disc in the middle of all the family.
Yeah, they don't care. Yeah. care.
So everyone's watching Vacations and what in the heck? Grandpa!
Oops! Yeah, exactly.
There it is.
Yeah, but so far we've got 1,266 shows online.
37 years.
Which ain't bad. Which ain't bad. So
It's a good start.
We don't have this year. We don't have this week's up. So Steve will do that tomorrow, probably. It's on YouTube.
Save live to YouTube, yeah.
Yeah. But we haven't been doing YouTube for 36 years.
Yeah.
There was no YouTube 36 years ago. There was no Google 36 years ago. So,
and that's technically, that's not even all of them.
We must be missing some.
A lot of the tapes.
That's only 50 weeks per year.
Right.
25 years. Ish.
Yeah, because I mean, a lot of them back in the days when we were at XXI.
Yeah, we had a lot of those were donated by a
listener. Don Nichols.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Don Nichols widow.
There's still a lot that weren't. I mean, there was,
Yeah, I started doing them in 2000. The end of 2000, November 17th. November 18th. Yeah. So, yeah, it's, we've got a lot up there. We don't have everything. But, having backups of things like that is an important consideration.
Yeah.
I've got all of those backed up, by the way, to a drive somewhere. Not that anyone will ever care, but I believe in having backups.
Remember all the photos that Lolly used to do?
I have all those.
You used to do
when the last website went down.
Hmm?
Yeah,
I have a lot of those.
When the last website went down, all
right.
When we used to be in Second Life, because someone begged us to come to Second Life and do stuff, and
People would show up there, and she was always putting. I remember when she started putting Rob as a Teletubby.
Yep, yep. I've got those somewhere. I should dig those out.
Those were cute.
Those were cute.
Excuse me.
I think I've got them somewhere. I hope I've got them somewhere.
Knowing you, they're 10 somewheres.
Yeah, exactly right.
But which?
I was a systems administrator. It's in my blood. Yep. I do not have enough backups.
Yep.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 800-790-0415. Apple has updated its support documentation to confirm the maximum battery cycle count for the new Mac Neo. In a nutshell, each battery cycle corresponds to the number of times a Mac laptop consumes the energy equivalent of 100% of its battery capacity across one or more charges. In other words, if you use 50% of the battery today, recharge it, then use 30% tomorrow and recharge again, and finally use 20% the next day, that would correspond to one full battery cycle. Based on the document, the MacBook Neo has a maximum cycle count of 1,000, meaning that after 1,000 battery cycles, it will be considered consumed, after which it'll likely need to be replaced. Importantly, that doesn't mean the battery will immediately stop recharging after it reaches the 1,000 cycle limit, but rather that its capacity to hold a charge and deliver power will be noticeably worse than before. And as Steve pointed out, that's the way it's always been for Macs, but it's now confirmed for the same for the Neo.
And it gets a little confusing that 100% battery charge could be 5 minutes when your battery is really old and depleted.
Right. Google has released emergency security updates to patch two high-severity Chrome vulnerabilities exploited in zero-day attacks. Google discovered both security flaws and patched them within 2 days of reporting the users reporting for users in the stable channel. And with new versions rolling out to Windows, Mac OS, and Linux systems, Google says the out-of-band update could take days or weeks to reach all users, so check for any of that new stuff. Apple's MacBook Neo is the company's first serious effort to break into the sub-$1,000 laptop business, and one less advertised change that may make the Neo more appealing more appealing to businesses, schools, and the accident prone is that its internal design is a bit more modular and easier to repair than other modern MacBooks. Replacements for pretty much any component in the Neo are simpler and involve fewer steps and tools than in the M5 MacBook Air, which is still a pretty high bar, so don't get too excited. That includes the battery, which in the MacBook Air is attached to the chassis with multiple screws and adhesive strips, but in which in the Neo comes out relatively easily after you get some shielding and flex cables out of the way. The most significant change in the Neo is that the keyboard is now its own separate component. So instead of being part of the chassis, and if you screw up the keyboard, you've screwed up your computer, you can now replace it. Google didn't waste any time integrating Gemini into its popular workspace apps, but those AI features are now getting an overhaul. The company says its new Gemini features for Drive, Docs, Sheets, and Slides will save you from the tyranny of the blank page by doing the hard work for you. Gemini will be able to create and refine drafts, stylize slides, and gather context from across your Google account. At this rate, you'll soon never have to use that squishy human brain of yours for anything ever again, and won't that be a relief? And just to make sure you're never far from Gemini again, Google has also added it to Maps. Gemini and Maps can answer complex real-world questions that Apple says a map could never answer before. No word on what it'll answer if you ask it, where the hell am I and how did I get here? Even we can't tell you that, but we can answer a lot of other questions if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 800-790-0415. I just got an update to my maps this morning, I think it was. Early this morning before I went to bed, or late this morning when I got up. And it is now Gemini compliant. So I guess I can ask Gemini to tell me things. I don't know what things I want Gemini to tell me, but I'll find it out at some point. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Arthur from Rochester, New York. What's up, Arthur?
Hi, Nick. How are you doing today?
Peachy. How are you?
I'm Keeny.
There you go.
So I've got Ubuntu.
Uh-huh.
And I use running version 2204.
Good.
Move on the old side, and I was looking to upgrade it to first 2404, and then there's going to be an next release, 2604, coming out, so I'm just trying to get up to date.
Sure.
I had a hell of a week. They updated the kernel on 2204 just before I was going to upgrade to 2404, and that caused networking issues. I figured that out. I fixed that. There was a new kernel update, and now last night I've installed it, and it's working properly.
There you go.
My concern, though, is so I'm still on 2204, and I'm about to go on 2404. I was doing things I don't like to do. I was playing with Grub. So in order to work around the problem before the update was released, I switched back to a kernel version 5.something.
Yeah.
So I've updated. I've run the update, so I'm now running kernel 6.8.0-106. And I've updated Grub so that it boots automatically into that version. This is my question. This is a should I worry about this question. If I look into /boot, I see the various VM Linux files.
Yep.
And the boot VM Linux is still pointing, the symlink is still pointing to the version 5 kernel. And the boot vmlinux.old is pointing to the new 6.8.0-106 kernel that I just installed. So moving forward, should I worry about that and continue trying to fix that, or should I just go ahead with the update?
Okay, this is very timely because I just had much the same problem. And I had, when I did an update, it screwed up. But when it comes back up and boots, you get multiple choices on that first text screen. And the first line says something like boot into Ubuntu, and the second line says something
advanced.
And when you go to advanced, you get to pick one of the other kernels on your drive.
Right.
So you can use that instead. So there's always a fallback to at least the previous version, if not multiple previous versions, depending on what you've got on your hard drive. So you, I wouldn't say it lets you upgrade with impunity, but it lets you upgrade with a little bit less worry than you might otherwise.
Okay, Nick, I've already done that, and originally the grub menu was hidden, so I exposed that, and so I can gain access to it when I boot. And at this point in time, well, I can go into the advanced, and I can select the zero if for the first kernel, and that is the 6.8.0 blah, blah, blah kernel. Also, if I were to reboot and just select the generic Ubuntu on the main grub page, it boots into 6.8 just fine. My concern is the symlinks in slash boot of OSPO for the current VM Linux is pointing to the version 5.
Right.
So that's not an issue.
It shouldn't be an issue. It shouldn't be an issue. Let me think for just a half a second here.
Why wouldn't it point to the current kernel?
Because he had trouble with the current kernel, so it went to the last one.
Reinstalling the last update, maybe?
Well, that's essentially what Advanced does. Right. So the first thing you want to do is you know which kernel you are currently running, so you don't actually delete your safety net, right? So you can use uname space dash R to get the version number.
Yep, I've done that, and it's the current release is 680.106.
Right.
The networking issues.
And that's the one that's working?
Yes.
Okay. So what you can do is list all of the installed kernels, and this again is a command line thing. dpkg for dpackage, distribution packaging, space dash dash list, which would list all of them, but you only care about the Linux images. So you can then type the pipe command. You know what the pipe command is?
Yeah, it used to be an SA.
Right, okay, so you type pipe, then grep space Linux dash image. So the full command would be dpkg space dash dash list pipe grep space Linux dash image. Then you'll see
a partridge in a pear tree.
Right. And you see a list of all of your versions. Now, if you look down the left hand side of that list, you will see two important markings. II, which means it's installed, and RC, which means it was removed, but the configuration files remain.
Okay.
Now,
I've done that, and I've grepped for II, and I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 kernels listed.
Perfect. So now you have two ways to remove old kernels. The safe bet is to use auto-remove. So if you type sudo apt auto-remove, which is all one word, space dash dash purge, P-U-R-G-E, what that automatically does is identify and remove the old kernels. But it keeps the current one and the immediate backup.
Okay. And if, just to double check, if I execute that command, is it going to ask me to enter a yes before I...
It's going to ask you what?
Will it ask me to confirm with me yes before I commit?
Yes, it will ask you for your password, and then it will ask you to confirm if that's what you actually want to do. Now, if you'd rather do it targeted, right, a manual removal of them instead, this is both safer and more dangerous, and I'm sure you know what I mean by that.
Yeah.
You could instead type sudo apt purge and then Linux dash image dash whatever version dash generic, probably.
Okay.
And then that would target removing only that the specific versions you no longer want. So you can do either the auto remove or the by hand remove.
Okay, I can give that a try. When I do the app auto remove purge, I see the various kernels listed. I have two version 5 kernels now, and it's listing the older version 5 kernel. And the version 6 kernel, I see the older broken one with the networking issues listed. So that will remove those from slash boot, etc.
Right. Now, once you have done that, you need to run sudo space update-grub.
Okay.
Before you do anything else like reboot or whatever. So once you do all of that, you have to update grub before you're certain it took.
And that should fix the...
That should now mean you should be fine.
Now, nobody else do this unless you're having that exact same problem.
Right. Don't just go wandering about in the kernel saying, oh, Nick did this. I actually did do that, and it worked for me, so I'm telling you what worked for me. Now, the before you do much of that, you should also make sure you've got enough space on your boot drive. And the way you do that is you type DF, for disk full, I guess, space dash H, so that it's a human readable number, space slash boot. And that will tell you how much disk space is in your boot drive.
That changes it. Cap H and little H changes between gigabytes and gigabytes.
Right. So it'll tell you, you know, what file system it's on and how much space is available and how much space is used. Now, many people, the boot sector is just a subdirectory on their main hard drive, and that's fine. But with some Linux excuse me, I got the hiccups all of a sudden. With some Linux distributions, the boot volume is separate, so you want to check to see that you've got enough space to screw around on it.
Yep, I got 154 gig free, and it's a separate volume.
Perfect. Then you're good to go.
Okay, I'll give that a shot, Nick. I appreciate the assistance, and I'm sorry you got bit by the same bug as me.
Yeah, I know. Believe me, I get it. But I'm glad I could solve it for you. I'm glad I blazed that trail.
I couldn't believe it was them and not me. I kept on pulling my hair out, what was left of it, trying to find what I did. It didn't appear immediately.
Yeah. No, it's not you.
Okay. Thank you, Nick.
Sure. My pleasure.
Bye.
Yeah, that's deep in the Linux weeds, but sometimes that's where you are. You know, mm-hmm. It's rare. It's rare, but it does happen, and I'm glad that
like
I was
anything
able to
else,
help Arthur with that. Like I said, I went through exactly the same thing myself.
Nothing is foolproof, what operating system you're working at.
I learned many years ago, when you make something foolproof, God makes a bigger fool.
Yeah.
That's just the way that works.
Yeah.
But the lovely thing about Linux is that it lets you do anything. So when you have a problem like that, instead of Windows had an update that bricked a bunch of machines. What do? You do nothing. Yeah. That's what you do. There's nothing you can do.
You erase and start over.
Yeah.
Right. Here, you can at least go in, if you know what you're doing and you know the magic incantations, you can go in and recover everything. Now, my hope, of course, is that Arthur has multiple backups, and that he first thing he does when he reboots after this is back up again.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're still listening, Arthur, but definitely the ability to go in and actually fix the boot process by hand, while yes, it's a very esoteric thing to do and a very high end thing to do, it is doable,
mm-hmm.
and that makes this a much safer operating system from my point of view, personally.
Which you couldn't do from Windows.
You couldn't do it from Windows, and I don't know that you can do it easily from the Mac either.
There are separate hidden volumes, one for the OS, one for the data. They're hidden from user view, but they're under there that you can probably get from terminal view.
Right. But this is an easy and well-known easy. I say easy. It's doable, and it's a well-known thing to be able to do. Now, again, the problem Arthur had is rare. He and I both had it, so it's not as rare as you might think. But it's fairly rare. It used to be this kind of thing happened all the time in Windows. I mean, all the time in Windows.
Mm-hmm.
In Linux. In Linux, it happened all the time. There's a joke T-shirt, I think, from Linus Tech that says, it's been 0 days since I recompiled the Linux kernel. And I used to do that regularly. And that's back in the days when it took a half a day to recompile. But nowadays you don't really ever need to do 99% of what Arthur just needed to do. People upgrade every day without a problem. And I get that, you know, sometimes every once in a while there's a hiccup somewhere, and I get that. But most people never need to use the command line in Linux. Just like there's a command line in the Mac. It's Tony Placilla and I took over your machine that time you brought it in to find and play on the command line. But there is a command line in the Mac. There's a command line in Windows. And there's a command line in Linux. And almost never do you need to use it anymore. So, I think that's good, but it's nice to know it's there if you need it. All right, back to the phones, and we're going to talk to the well-named Nick from Rochester, New York. What's up, Nick?
Thank you for that compliment. Same to you. Quite well-named.
Thank you.
Quick question. Lenovo just pushed out a BIOS update. When we tried to update the BIOS, well, we were successful in updating the BIOS. However, Windows then determined that it wasn't going to start up. It won't recognize pins. It won't recognize passwords. And is forcing us to basically start from scratch. Is there a way to update a BIOS without having to crash all the Windows?
Almost never.
It sounds like you might have BitLocker turned on.
Of course.
Yeah, turn that off before you update the BIOS. If you're lucky, you can go back to Lenovo's site on another computer and download an older BIOS. Did you write down what BIOS version you had before you updated? Because if you can reinstall that old version, that might work.
Well, of course I did not. We have about three of these machines. One of them, like I said, it just crashed it. We reinstalled, a waste of about 2.5-3 hours of our time. That's why I called to say, is there a way of doing it without having to spend all that time again?
All right. It is possible that the BIOS that you installed sets the defaults, which, of course, Windows doesn't use. So go into the BIOS and...
Okay.
Well, you want to make sure a couple of things. The storage mode is going to be either AHCI or RAID. So whichever one it was, it might have changed it to the other one. If you don't have a RAID array, leave it AHCI. It could be that the boot mode has been reset to legacy from UEFI. So make sure that that's fixed. Make sure the boot order is correct if you've got multiple drives, because sometimes a BIOS update changes those, and check TPM, the trusted platform module, to make sure that that is correct, that that is correctly set to and is on and set to 2.0 and et cetera, et cetera. So you want UEFI, and you want TPM on, and you might need to disable CSM, and I don't remember what CSM stands for. I'm sorry, I don't remember what CSM stands for, but it's in my head that you need to reset, disable that if it got enabled, and then try rebooting, because often a BIOS update comes with default settings, which are almost always wrong for Windows.
All right. Well, I'll try on one of the machines to see if going through those steps helps, and then perhaps turning off BitLocker, figure that out, and see what happens.
Yep. Good luck. I'm sorry. I wish I had better news for you.
Found an article at the Windows Club on things to do if a BIOS update messes up Windows. I'm going to post that now.
Perfect. Okay. Nick is gone. So, okay. Thank you, Nick. One of the things, again, this goes back to what we've been talking about. Disable BitLocker. It is not useful for 99% of people, and it is dangerous and cumbersome and useless for Windows, because Windows does all of these odd little updates and things that can screw up so easily, and if your data are encrypted, you may never see them again. Uninstall BitLocker. It is the dumbest thing Microsoft's ever done.
And make sure you have a good update, a backup before you do an update.
Always back up before you do it. Back up twice before you do it.
Might have been able to save some time by restoring from backup instead of trying to fix Windows.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I particularly want to thank everyone who called in. Particularly the last couple of calls were challenging. I like challenging. Not too challenging, but challenging enough. And those were. So thank you. Thank you, everybody who called in. I want to, again, wish everybody a happy Pi Day, 3.14159.
We're coming up on it right now.
So just before the end of the show, we will hit Pi to 7 significant digits.
Well, 10 if you count milliseconds.
If you count milliseconds, exactly right.
Go to PiDay.org.
Well, we'll be back in next week with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?